Aaron, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going, man?
So what are we talking about this week?
I think we're talking about homies.
Homies. What's up, Home Slice?
Yeah, you're my homie, man.
Well, we make our home in Kyoto, Japan, but I thought the most interesting part of this month's Core Audio was about the dogs in Moscow.
Yeah, I thought. When I first heard it, I couldn't believe it, that dogs would actually, get on a subway or a train and commute. That just sounds so far out.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's all. I think all of our Russian listeners are going to call us out. Be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, that's not true, right?
But it's not all. I looked it up, multiple sources. Uh-huh. It's not all dogs in Moscow, but there is a group.
Oh, right. No, of
there
course.
Is a group yeah, that yeah, has been yeah. documented that do this. And
I wonder how big the group is. Is it like a giant pack of dogs? And why do the subway like?
Yeah, they don't do anything.
Or the trains,
they don't stop them.
They don't kick them off.
Apparently they commute from the suburbs to the city. The city is where they get, you know, it's easier for them to get food from the tourists, but it's not as safe.
Right.
So that's a wild story that apparently is true. I hope it's true.
Yeah. Well, even if it's not true, I think it's really interesting.
Yeah. Never let truth get in the way of good story.
That's right. Good stories are good.
No, but apparently that is true. But of course, more natural homing instincts exist all throughout the animal kingdom.
Sure, I think the most famous is probably homing pigeons.
They're even called homing pigeons.
Yeah,
I was actually listening to this really interesting interview about homing pigeons and this story from World War II.
Mm-hmm.
There was the British, apparently towards the end of the war, they took over this. German town, and the Americans were set to bomb it.
Okay.
And the Americans were 20 miles away, and they were set to bomb the town in a matter of hours.
Okay.
And so it's full of British soldiers now.
Right.
And there was no time to get the message back to the base, but they had brought homing pigeons with them.
Yeah.
And these homing pigeons, they were in a box.
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't like they were tracking where they were.
Right.
And they were able to traverse, this pretty far distance.
Yeah.
And, with a message, you know, tied to their legs, and let it be known to the American forces, don't bomb this town.
Wow.
We've taken it.
Wow.
There's lots of stories of the homing pigeons and, lots of research into why this is.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things is they think that maybe it's smell. Maybe they're tracking like making a map of smells.
Yeah.
Okay, there's the smell of the ocean coming from the south, or there's the smell of olive groves coming from the northeast. And they're tracking this as they go along.
Right.
And, you know, maybe that plays a part, but they've done some research showing that even when these pigeons are in smell-proof boxes.
Yeah.
They still are able to make their way home.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm sure that pigeons, like many animals, probably use some of the same devices that humans use, such as the topography of the land. They may use certain landmarks that they can see. And one thing about pigeons that I read, homing pigeons, is that some scientists suspect that they have some kind of sound, that they have like a sound map. That they navigate through sounds that we can't hear. They're outside of our range of hearing, but they create like a soundscape, and the pigeons can find their way based on sound. The reason that they have this theory is they've taken those same pigeons. If they take them to certain places, they can't navigate. They get confused and they can't find their way home. And I don't know why that is, but it has something to do with the sounds of that area, which is interesting.
Yeah, I was actually reading about certain Bermuda triangles for pigeons where they're not able to navigate. I wonder if that has something to do with sound.
Yeah, right.
If it has something to do with the magnetism.
That's right. I think monarch butterflies are able to navigate the Earth's magnetic field in some way to do, because they have really far migration patterns, like thousands and thousands of miles. And apparently they're able to go to the exact place every year, every migration period, based on the Earth's magnetic field. So that's something.
How cool would that be able to feel? I mean, apparently pigeons have some sort of magnetic capability in their beaks.
Interesting.
I was reading a couple of years ago about biohackers, people who try to modify their bodies to develop different senses that we don't naturally have.
And
one device was this belt that you wear around your waist, and it has like maybe 16 different pods that can vibrate. And the section of your belt that is facing north is always vibrating.
Oh, interesting.
So you have this kinesthetic, this physical sensation of where north is.
That's it. That's wild.
Yeah,
that's wild.
Yeah.
Of course, I mean, you can also use the sun, but if it's a cloudy day.
Yeah.
Or the stars at night, but again, clouds can obscure that. But yeah, to have a physical sensation of where direction is.
And wherever you are, you know, on the planet, you would actually have a feeling that, my home is that way.
Right.
Like over my right shoulder.
Oh, wow.
A little bit to the left.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
But another thing that I've seen biohackers do that I don't think it helps them navigate, but they've embedded magnets into their fingertips so that they can feel magnetic waves.
Wow.
And you know, the people talk about they can actually feel electronics around them.
Yeah, that would make
through
sense.
A buzzing kind of feeling.
That'd be kind of sort of scary for if you had a really nice computer that had a lot of information on it. Some guy comes along and said wants to, you know, touch your computer or move it for you. You gotta watch
like
out for
those
guys.
A supervillain, supervillain skill.
Yeah.
So I wonder if one day we'll find some way to hack our biology.
I'm sure.
To navigate magnetically, like birds.
Yeah.
But apparently this ability to navigate magnetically, it's not about just feeling that this way is north and this way is south.
Yeah.
They're actually feeling like a magnetic topography.
Yeah. Like a fingerprint almost that they can hone in on certain places that have meaning to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the place they were born. I mean, salmon do that. I don't know if it's really through the Earth's magnetic field, but that's another species of animal that's well known for its migration. They're born in a river, a freshwater stream, and they spend years out at sea, and somehow they make it back to the exact same place where they were born.
Right.
And then they spawn and they die. But that's amazing.
Yeah.
Like if you think about how wide and far the Earth is for those species, that's just incredible.
Yeah, I don't know that there's any other theory that can explain, you know, how both birds and creatures that live under the ocean.
Yeah.
So, you know, back to this idea of navigating magnetically.
Yeah.
You know, what I think is interesting is I always thought it just means you have an internal compass and you know this way is north, this way is south, this way is east, this way is west. But really, it must be something much more complicated and much more fine and granular.
Yeah.
Because can you imagine if you were just left out in the middle of the ocean with a compass?
Right. Yeah.
Like, what would you do? That would be meaningless to you.
Yeah, you'd know north, south, east, and west, but
so what?
So what? Where are you going to go?
So what? Clearly, their maps go much beyond just the directions.
Well, yeah, that reminds me of those stories that everyone's heard of, I'm sure, about dogs who have been left in some unknown location to them. And after a number of weeks or months, they find their way right back to the home of their owner. And that makes you wonder, too, you know, how on earth has that taken place? And furthermore, there's a particular story. Again, I think this happened in World War II about a soldier, an English soldier who went to fight in France during World War II, and somehow his dog found its way across the English Channel and into France. And amidst all the bombing and the shelling that was going on, it hunted its owner down and found it. So
he made his way from France to England.
No, from England to France.
Way easier.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's going south. No, but the fact that he found his owner. How is that human? Like, how is that possible?
So,
you know, it sort of makes you realize there's more than just navigating the magnetic fields. There's got to be some kind of connection.
Power of love.
In the power of love, it could be. Who knows? Or maybe a psychic connection somehow.
Right. Sure. There's been studies about animals that can sense when their owner is coming home.
Uh huh. That's right. Yeah.
So I think we actually did a lesson on that one. Mm-hmm. So yeah, maybe they're able to sense their owners across distances.
Yeah. Yeah. And the cats as well. There's a story of a cat. The family was on vacation. They lost the cat. They couldn't find it. And they had to go back home. And a couple of months later, the cat shows up. It's, of course, starving and bleeding from the paws, and it's in really bad shape. But it was definitely their cat. And some people ask them, hey, like, how do you know that's your cat? It could be another cat. Maybe it's just a stray cat. But no, they knew because apparently they had had a chip put in the cat to find it.
How far did this cat?
I don't know how far it was. Yeah, I don't have the details. I just heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a friend. Did you ever know Perry? He used to live in town.
No.
Anyhow, Perry, he's got this story about losing his dog and then his family moving across country. And he said that he was like hitchhiking across the states, and he just saw his dog one day.
I'm just saying.
Like on the side of the road.
Really?
And I don't know if he somehow, but then the dog like ran off again.
Yeah,
but when he returned home, the dog had found the new home.
Oh,
but I don't know. He had a lot of tall
tales.
Yeah,
tall tales.
so maybe that story isn't so reliable. But yeah, there's lots of stories about animals finding their way back home. But what do you think about your hamsters? You think they?
I don't have hamsters, Dan. I know you want me to have hamsters. You keep saying that, but actually, I have guinea pigs.
It's pretty much the same thing.
No, it's a little different. Don't tell that to a guinea pig.
I studied that. I studied guinea pigs biology class. It's much the same family.
Well,
it's the same family.
It is
right?
The same family. Okay. Yeah, the rodent
Enough
family.
Said.
Yeah. Well, anyway, they like their home. They stay home, and they don't even like coming out of their little cubby holes. They're not up for traveling.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So,
okay.
But anyway, back to the homing skills of animals. We're animals too, and I think some people are really good at navigating and finding their way, and others just seem to be missing that part of the brain that allows them to know where they are.
Right.
And one example is my wife. She more than anyone I've ever met in my life, she really has a lot of trouble navigating. She gets lost so easily, and she just doesn't seem to know right from left, from north to south, and it's really difficult
for
her.
Is she able to say this way is north in like a grid city?
No,
like
absolutely not. No. Have you ever
tried to teach her? Like, okay, this area where we live is in the north.
Well, yeah, is in the south. Because I'm the opposite. I tend to always know where north, south, east, and west is. Even when I go travel abroad to a city, I just take a look at a map, and somehow I can remember it, and I tend to know where I am just based on that, looking at the map before I go.
Yeah, I've traveled with you, and I can see you have a way better sense of direction. Are you constantly, like when you go underground in a subway, are you constantly trying to track, okay, the way I came in was towards my back,
don't really have to make a point to do it. I just do it sort of in the background, and I can tap into it if I want to. And I've known lots of people that can do this. And interestingly, they're usually male. And I don't know why that is. But the people I've met who have the best sense of direction tend to be males. And I don't know why.
To your wife, do you think she just doesn't pay attention? Or do you think she actually...
She just doesn't have that ability.
Right.
I mean, and that's every person has, areas that their ability is weak. And that just happens to be one of the weak
ones. Yeah, they're a Falake. You probably remember
Falake. Yeah, I remember her. Yeah.
I tried to teach her just the basic directions because it's so easy in the city we live in.
Right.
Because, we're ringed by mountains on three sides.
Yeah.
So I would say to her, okay, the side without mountains,
that's the south.
That's south.
That's south, yeah.
And if you can remember that south, then it's easy to, based on that, you can judge where the other.
But of course, that's a huge generalization, and maybe the best navigators in the world happen to be women. I don't know.
But you're making an implication that.
Maybe there is an evolutionary reason for it.
Okay, well, we've heard the theories. What is the theory?
Well, there's one theory that because way back, before civilization. When we were hunters and gatherers as communities trying to survive, that the men tended to travel long distances in search of game and hunting game. And they would have to follow the migration of game. and they would need to find their way back home to bring the meat back home to the women and children. Perhaps after thousands upon thousands of years of doing that, that men developed better homing devices than women did.
But in prehistory,
yes,
I think you know, people were nomadic, so they were on the move. It's not like they were settled in the towns or homes.
Right.
So if they were moving around, that would be the counterpoint. Another counterpoint would be that, you know, in some cultures, maybe women take on a more of a gathering sort.
So they would have to roam around to
search berries
and,
you know, this is the area with these groves. And but I don't know, maybe it's a smaller distance.
Yeah. No, it's just really interesting. But yeah.
So I understand that you think that in past life you were a gatherer.
I have no idea. Sometimes I feel like a gatherer now. Yeah. I'm always gathering stories.
Yeah. Gathering nuts and berries.
Gathering stories to share with others.
Yeah. What else? What else did we want to talk about?
I don't know. What did you want to talk about?
Oh, I remember the one thing I wanted to talk about.
What's that?
This tribe in Australia that doesn't have words for left and right.
Okay.
And because of that, they use the directions, cardinal directions, north, south, east, and west for everything.
So, oh, really?
So they might say, could you pass me that cup?
On the south of the table or something.
Not just on the south. They would say on the south, southeast, middle direction.
Oh, wow. Really?
And you know, where's your coat? Oh, it's in the northwest.
Oh, wow. How about that?
So because of that, because they don't have left and right, they constantly know where they are without having to think about
it. Oh, I see. It's just sort of built into their whole worldview.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, it's even how they say how are you is where are you?
Oh, wow.
And then by saying your location,
I guess you're
saying I'm good.
This is an Aboriginal tribe of Australia?
Yeah, somewhere in Australia.
Somewhere in Australia.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was listening to this interview with this researcher, and they would say, like, you know, how are you? And she'd be like, I don't know. And they just thought she was really dim.
Yeah, right.
And she started to get it slowly, but it's not even a matter of just saying I'm northwest.
Yeah.
It's so fine. There are 80 different directions that they have.
Are you kidding me?
And they can immediately call it out what part of those 80 cardinal directions they are.
Interesting.
And but she said after living with them over time, she started to get it.
Yeah.
And then one day she all of a sudden realized that as she was walking outside, she had kind of this certain part of her brain that was throwing up a mental map of where she was in relation to her home.
Wow.
And
then I would imagine when she interacts with, you know, like a standard Western kind of culture, when the directions are as simple as just left, right, north, south, east, west, she must think, you know, we're really handicapped.
Yeah, yeah, it must seem so vague and cloudy.
Yeah, you know, it's like, how do these people live? How do they get around? It's too simple. Yeah.
I mean, when you hear about a culture like that, it makes you think that, you know, maybe we do have
these
amazing
abilities
to navigate. It just hasn't been ingrained into us through our culture.
Either that, or we just our attention. It just never surfaces because we're so busy, you know, with our iPhones and computers and jobs and lives and families that we're not sensitive to it somehow.
Right.
I don't know. It's really
sometimes when you meet somebody who has no sense of direction, you know, you just get a feeling that they're just not paying attention.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe that's just you, man. I sort of get the feeling that they're in a different space. They're just different.
That's a nice way of saying it. It's a nice way of saying you're spaced out. You're in a different space.
You're in a different space. Your perception of reality is different. That's all.
Well, I think we might have reached our end.
Okay. Well, are you going to be able to find your way home tonight?
I hope so. I've got a compass on my iPhone.
Yeah.
And I think I'll be okay.
Well, I have Google Maps, so that'll save me if I get lost.